Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, or good morning, wherever or whatever time that you're actually listening to this. This is John here from HC3. I'm joined with my guest, Dr. David Krause, whom you've heard many times before with these discussions. And we're jumping back into a particular thing that we always discuss and talk about, which is Legionella and Legionella's disease. And we're going to be jumping into the technology now and what's maybe going to change as we move forward with perhaps new technology. David, how are you doing?
I'm well. I'm well. Good to talk with you today.
I'm excited about this because, as I said to you before, as we were talking just before we started, I was like, well, you know, with everything that we've been dealing with Legionella over the years, shouldn't we have a fix for this by now?
Yeah, you would think. You would think. It's been a real conundrum for building owners and operators, public health officials, water treatment companies. You know, it seems for years, the more we look at buildings that have actually had Legionnaires outbreaks and growth in their systems, we find that old recommendations that have been put out there with good intentions really weren't evidence-based. An example is you know, heat pasteurization or thermal treatments no longer recommended. I've advised since 2009 that we should abandon heat pasteurization or heat treatment because it simply doesn't work. It's almost assured that the bug is going to recolonize and have a resurgence in those systems. And you know, what's commonly used now is hyperchlorination, you know, dosing your water system with a high concentration of chlorine or sodium hypochlorite.
Which is
and inevitably the problems that come out of that are sometimes worse than the organisms, you know? So David, we've got to come up with a different technology.
All right. So David, so is it the technology or is it the ignorance of understanding the pathogen?
It's kind of, I've looked at it in a couple of ways. One is the methods that we've tried to apply to buildings and cooling towers and hot tubs or other types of water systems are the same processes that have often been used, say, for a city water system. So you're trying to take something that was never intended for that use and often put in a square peg in a round hole.
Yeah.
And you know, those chemical treatments such as, you know, chlorine, were really never tested or intended to control Legionella. They were there to control cholera and E. coli and other enteric or intestinal microbes. And frankly, those are kind of easy to kill with chlorine. Legionella and some of the other waterborne pathogens that we're dealing with today, they're much more resistant.
Now, you've started to look at this a little bit more in depth, obviously, because you've been doing this for a very long time. But from your expertise as a toxicologist, let's talk about that, because you've kind of moved toward that side of things, where you've managed to develop maybe, you know, other theories, other hypotheses, which has resulted in your inventor, your new system.
Well, it has. I'll start with, you know, my background and training is in toxicology, in looking at the various methods to, you know, things that kill or injure people or populations or even animals. And understanding those mechanisms are really important. And so one of the things that I've really wondered why we have to add chlorine or monochloramine or chlorine dioxide or other substances that are essentially toxic agents.
Yeah.
To our drinking water.
I know.
In order to make it safer. And we know that all of these have adverse outcomes, disinfectant byproducts. Some of these disinfection byproducts are carcinogenic. These chlorine treatments can initiate corrosion and lead leaching into the water from the building's water system. Even monochloramine has recently been shown to be the cause of I'll say earlier recognized but not much studied disinfection byproducts. So there's no free lunch. So my thoughts were, instead of adding one more contaminant in order to kill or control Legionella and other pathogens in the water, what can we remove from the water that these organisms need in order to survive?
Okay. That's fascinating. So you're not putting anything in, which is completely unique. You're actually taking something out. And how did you come up with this? I mean, how did you get to, I don't know, come up with this theory and move forward with it, realizing that this might be the answer that's been, should have been there a long time ago?
Yeah. It started off what I call a reductive solution process.
Right.
Instead of adding one more thing to fix the problem, let's see if we can take some things away. With filtration, you're trying to physically remove the microbes from the water, but in building water systems, that's a very tough thing to do for a long time because of the amount of debris and the cost of filtration is exorbitant.
So I guess what you're doing is you're taking away to destroy the environment which the pathogen can live.
Exactly. Is there one essential thing that you need, that this bug needs in order to colonize, grow, and continue to live? And we all know this. For us, it's air, okay?
Yeah, we all need air, yeah.
Here's an example that I've used. You could be sitting in a wonderful restaurant, and the temperature is great, the company is great, the people around you, the food you have in front of you is wonderful. You have all the nutrients and environment that you want. But if someone takes all of the oxygen out of the room, you can't enjoy it, and you're not going to live very long, right? So for humans, there's three distinct ways to go through asphyxiation.
Right.
So, most people would just say, okay, just, stop, remove all the oxygen or, displace it with another gas that you can't use.
Yeah.
So that's one way, by physical removal. The other mechanism is by interfering with the transport of oxygen. And that's by carbon monoxide, which produces carboxyhemoglobin, which prevents the oxygen that you take in from your lungs to actually reach your cells. And the cells die, and then you die. The third way, and this is a very morbid one, but hydrogen cyanide. So cyanide.
That one just doesn't sound. It just doesn't sound safe.
No, it's not a good one. No. But it is something we still deal with fires, and many synthetic products produce cyanide when they burn in a home, and that's people don't realize there's still plenty of oxygen in there. If there wasn't, the fire wouldn't burn.
Yeah.
It's the contaminants in the smoke that actually enter the body, enter the bloodstream, go to the cells, and actually prevent the cells from uptaking the oxygen.
Right.
So you're breathing, and there's oxygen there, and it's getting transported to the cells, but it can't cross above the barrier.
I was going to say, it can't cross over. You can't, you're not getting it.
Yeah. Yeah. So if we take that morbid analogy, in the world of disinfection products and ways to control Legionella, chlorine and chlorine-type products act more like the hydrogen cyanide. They interfere with the cell walls and how microbes transport oxygen and nutrients across those cell walls. Without interaction with the outside world for that microbe, for Legionella, it can't carry out metabolic respiration, the mechanism of life, turning oxygen and nutrients into energy, and it eventually dies. It's interfering
with. Which is what we as humans need. We have metabolic systems in our body, which we have to be able to balance, because if we don't balance those metabolic systems, we get ill and, we die.
Yeah. And without oxygen, literally, our brains and our heart muscles die rapidly. We are highly dependent upon oxygen. So
how long can we survive without it, David?
Oxygen?
Yeah.
About 3 minutes.
Right. So literally, so that's, I guess that's, and the reason I'm asking this, is that's the kind of time scale as well, I guess, with any pathogen as well. You remove that oxygen.
No, a lot of pathogens they have a slower burn rate. So they can hang around a little bit longer at levels that are important to them. But ultimately, there is a threshold below which they can't survive if they're an obligate aerobe, meaning they have to have oxygen. But on the other end of that, with so the way ultimately chlorine stops Legionella and Pseudomonas and NTMs from living is by interfering with metabolic respiration.
Okay.
We can also interfere by stop metabolic respiration if we deny it oxygen to begin with. So believe it or not, in water, there's a certain amount of dissolved oxygen. Not the oxygen bound to the hydrogen that makes H2O.
Yeah.
But oxygen that is...
Because that's just to make that clear. So a lot of people will say, wait a minute. Isn't it a part of it?
Yeah. Yeah. That's chemically bound and is not going to disassociate. But
right.
When you hear about the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico, yeah. Where there is insufficient oxygen for fish to live.
Right. Yes.
Okay. That's what we're talking about, that through biological and chemical processes, the oxygen levels in that water become too low, and then fish and mollusks That's and other right. organisms that need some amount of oxygen fail to thrive and eventually die. Well, Legionella is the same way. Without sufficient oxygen, it doesn't metabolize, it doesn't grow, it doesn't colonize, it doesn't cause infection. So I thought, well, that may be one way to do it, but how would you do it? And I looked into the literature, and there were actually a handful of studies back in the late 70s, mid 80s that had reported that observation, that Legionella pneumophila was an obligate aerobe, and that under lower and lower oxygen levels in the water, it would actually begin, its demise. It would begin to slow its metabolism. It would not reproduce as well. And under anaerobic conditions completely, it would stop reproducing and growing at all.
You would think then, David, if, as you're saying, we'd be back in the 70s when this research had been done, and whether there was empirical evidence of it, why has it taken this long for you to come up with really a solution? Because if they knew about it and they knew that that was the answer, why did we go down the whole road of the technology that we've been fighting with now?
Well, you know, that's I asked that question. Well, if they knew this back then, but when you read these papers, you realize in 1977, 1978, when John Feeley, who was one of the preeminent researchers in this, he wrote this up. But everything, it's a side note. It's a sidebar. It's a one line. We observe this because, well, there are two things. Back then, they were trying to figure out how to get it to grow. How do you get this microbe that doesn't grow under normal conditions in the laboratory? And so they were really just working on how do we actually get it to grow and repeatedly be able to detect it in water samples. So that right, okay. their focus was not controlling it. And again, at that point, they didn't know it was in your municipal water system. They didn't know that it was in your hot water system in your building. They thought it was just in cooling towers.
Yeah, of course, because we never had, we had the first outbreak as we did check 76. That out. Ladies and gentlemen, go back to our other episode that we did on the history of Legionella. This is when it really kind of hit to the fore, so they didn't know about it.
Yeah, yeah. So they were first just characterizing what it was doing.
Right.
And how to get it to grow. And then Wadowski, he did a couple of papers, and they were trying to get Legionella to grow in a circulating water model, a circulating water system to be able to control it and make sure it grew. And they noted that under a certain level of oxygen that it wouldn't amplify, wouldn't keep growing, even if all the other conditions were ideal. And so that was kind of important, but their measurement methods were a little antiquated. So 1985, the modern technologies we have for measuring dissolved oxygen in water weren't as good. But they really, again, weren't looking to see how they control it. They were looking to see how do we even grow it? How do we maintain live, viable stocks in the laboratory?
Yeah.
And then in 79, 81, Fleermans did a series of testing. They're trying to figure out where does Legionella live in the environment. And they went out in hundreds, I think over 700 rivers and streams and lakes and ponds around the world, around the country, and tried to detect Legionella in these water systems. one of the measurements they took was also dissolved oxygen. And one of the observations they had, one of the observations they had was that it liked low dissolved oxygen, but below 0.3 or point, it was 0.2, they never saw any Legionella pneumophila in any of the samples.
So they saw that evidence, but they didn't click it in. They were still looking at trying to grow it. So obviously it never clicked about removing it.
Right there, they were just trying to figure out what environment does it grow in.
Okay, that's why it was missed then.
Yes, yes. And most of the water we deal with is oxygenated or highly oxygenated. It's just, it's how part of the processes you use to even drink, treat drinking water to remove gases such as hydrogen sulfide.
Well, now they have machines for your home where you can oxygenate your water. And then
And
that's only been recently in the last few years, really, that that's came out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it creates a number of issues. Even ozone treatment, which is I would say fairly commonly used as part of a water treatment, they say it leaves no residual disinfectant, and that's true. Mm. But what it does do, it can leave that water super saturated with oxygen. Because when that O3 breaks down,
it needs to survive and thrive and colonize.
So, yeah, I've actually seen that. And sometimes you'll see that in like a high rise or a pressurized building's water system when you fill your glass with water.
Yeah.
Usually hot water, and it's hazy.
Yes.
And
it
if
does.
You give it a second.
Kind of it comes out with that kind of cloudiness, that kind of hazy.
Yeah. If you give it a second and you look at the glass jar, you'll see if the haze settles, it's sediment. If it forms bubbles and rises and clears, that's air. And a lot of that is oxygen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, I think, part of it is just the research and looking at it. And it was just a foregone fact that water has dissolved oxygen, and so what? Well,
that gave you that aha moment, because you could see where the missing bridge was.
Yeah. Well, it definitely did have a different priorities. And also looking at, well, how would you remove oxygen from water? Well, you know, people who work with boiler systems and power plants, even hydronic heating systems, they commonly remove dissolved oxygen from your water so that you can prevent corrosion. So if you take oxygenated water and you put it into your boiler, it's going to drive that oxygen into the metal of the boiler and cause rust and corrosion.
You're going to have corrosion there. And I guess as well, when you add things like chlorine and things like that to water as well, you're also going to a compound.
Iron oxide.
Exactly, yes.
Yes. So in order to avoid that, engineers for years had been using rapid oxidizers to add to the water. Well, I mean, they're using literally rocket fuel, hydrazine, to add into this water to remove the oxygen, to consume all the oxygen. Well, that's fine if you're not going to drink the water.
I was going to say that, yeah.
But, you know, not really an option if you're going to use it in your, you know, your building's premise plumbing or your hot water system for showers. So it really wasn't until 2000 that a patent was approved for what they called a a gas transfer membrane contactor. And so the developers of this, and I believe it was from Germany, had developed it. And eventually 3M, which is now Solventum, took over the patent and started producing these devices, which now mechanically, without adding toxic, you know, hydrazine or huge energy input and boiling the water and all that stuff, you're able to remove dissolved oxygen from water without making it undrinkable or adversely affecting the water quality. So that wasn't until 2000 that was even patented. And even until probably, you know, production of these contactors was really limited and sold to computer chip manufacturers and pharmaceutical companies to use water that didn't corrode or change their product. And that really wasn't really available until 2014, 2015.
Wow. So how did you, so you've obviously studied all this, you've recognized where this particular, so how did you come up with this? Let's talk about this new system, because you've developed now from that, you know, evidence that you've seen, the literature and everything you've gone through, you've had the aha moment. Let's talk about LIDO.
Yeah. So LIDO stands for Legionella Inhibition by Deoxygenation, L-I-D-O. And so I started off with working with a company called Powerflow Systems to help me manufacture, build a I'll say, a benchtop proof of concept device. And so we developed a recirculating model, got Legionella growing in it, and then consciously, you know, intentionally removed dissolved oxygen to lower and lower levels until the Legionella stopped growing. And
that's fascinating, that to think about you just being able to isolate that aspect and deoxygenate the water, removing that and then killing off and not having to have any other compounds in there, yeah, which is just what you're saying. You're taking it away rather than putting it in.
We're removing that one important thing.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Well, then the question was, can this be scaled up? Can we do this on a larger scale? You know, it's funny, some of these devices are used in pretty large capacity in ice rinks. So if you ever see very clear ice at the ice rinks and the hockey rinks, they use the same device in order to remove the oxygen so there's no bubbles in the ice, so you can see the advertisements through the ice.
I never knew that. That's fascinating. That's what they've done.
So it's got all kinds of uses.
The idea from ice skating.
Yeah. You never ask what you're not seeing, you know. Why don't we see bubbles?
That's true. That's true, yeah.
Yeah. So, we kind of went that direction and then developed a laboratory research model. So a full-scale model to be able to use, you know, actual size water heaters and a full-scale contactor, and developed a rig that we took to a laboratory and under safe conditions colonized it, this circulating system with Legionella and Haemophila, and got it to grow in there, and then flipped a switch and started having it going through the contactor and removed it, reduced the dissolved oxygen little bit by little bit. Because what we wanted to know was, how low do you have to go in order to prevent
it in stages? You didn't just whip it out straight away. You had to do it in particular stages to actually measure the impact.
Yes. Yes. Right. Exactly. Exactly. And so what was interesting about this is that we kept bringing it down lower and lower and lower, and, you know, testing with Legionella. And of course, you don't have the results for your Legionella test for 2 weeks after you've already collected the samples. So you're kind of moving along in a blind fashion.
Yeah.
But we, you know, we had a very robust system to document and record all this. And we're actually doing it at the laboratory. So we didn't have shipping and other confounders that could confuse
the
results.
This was essentially your first test. This was your test. This is proof of concept.
Well, we're beyond proof of concept. Now we're looking at what's the threshold. What's the dose response?
Okay. Yeah.
And so once we got down to 0.3 parts per million of dissolved oxygen in water, which is 300 micrograms of dissolved oxygen per milliliter of water, all of a sudden the amplification stopped and we started seeing log reductions in Legionella in that system, which had been growing it for weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. And what was interesting and coincidental with that is we look back at the studies by Fleermans,
right,
who had been testing Legionella in the wild. And of course,
because he was looking at it in rivers and stream.
They never found it growing below 0.3 part per million.
Wow.
And so.
This confirmed everything you're suspecting. This confirmed everything for you.
It showed us, you know, what happens in a natural water system is also happening in a man-made water system. And so when you have
How can you scale that, though? You've got that proof of concept. I mean, you've had the proof of concept. You're now into measuring it. You've built the model, but I guess, I mean, now you've got to look at, well, this has to be scaled into municipal water supplies or any, you know, building regular, you know, this is massive.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's nice about it is we're not adding chemicals into our drinking water every day now. We're able to not produce carcinogens. And
phenomenal.
If we look at what chlorine and other oxidants do. They inherently increase the corrosion rate and degradation rate of your plumbing systems and the pipes and the electrical, you know, the water heaters and everything.
See,
if you remove oxygen, it actually slows it.
That's fascinating, because not only are you making the water safer, but you're actually, I mean, this goes beyond even that. It's actually saving investment into plumbing systems.
It's extending the lifespan of the plumbing systems rather than massively shortening them. So we actually then took the equipment and created a mobile installable system, and we decided to move in the direction of treating hot water first.
Okay. Right.
Kind of low-hanging fruit.
Hot
water systems are more at risk for Legionella growth. And we thought, you know, if we can do this, we can, make a bigger impact. So we actually worked with a client who had an outbreak at their residential properties in Baltimore.
Right.
And had gone through, just really tough times and, I'll say, ineffective control using chlorine dioxide for years.
Wow.
And we're, constantly having to do, new hyperchlorinations and
it was constantly colonizing.
We were getting Legionella coming in from the city of Baltimore's water system 1 in 3 times. So
that's crazy.
1 out of 3 times we would see it coming in, and we would see concentrations that would, if you detected that in your building, you would initiate a remediation. But that's what's coming in from the city. And so they're constantly being recolonized.
What kind of concentrations was that they were getting from that?
Normally, we're usually seeing less than 1 CFU per mil, but we would see concentrations periodically of 20 to 40 to up to 60 CFU per mil.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's off charts.
Yeah. That's not all the time. It comes and it goes. It's transient.
Yeah.
But if
you're still getting a hit on it, I mean, that's serious.
Well, and then that would colonize the system and the regrowth happens again and you're off to the races again and trying to fix it.
So
we actually had 3 buildings there. They're all built the same. And so we had some great controls, and we're able to, the property owners offered to let us use this as a pilot test. And so we actually installed the Lido system in the building. And looked at all the systems and the modifications that are needed to install it in a 6-story apartment complex.
Yeah.
Number of unknowns and uncertainties that you run into with that. And we found good success. We basically were able to, without adding any disinfectant to that water, maintain that system without any growth of Legionella and Haemophila for several months.
That's phenomenal. How long did it take, David, for when you installed that Lido system to get some kind of control to actually see the results?
About 2 weeks.
Wow, that's good. That is.
Yeah, and that's the kind of the life cycle of Legionella. It's a softer hand.
Yeah,
it's not going in and trying to kill it immediately. It's just denying it its oxygen.
And you kept it from colonizing. So even after that incubation period, after that 2-week period, it was constantly, it couldn't regrow. It couldn't colonize.
Exactly. So the Lido system is constantly removing dissolved oxygen from the water that's brought in to replenish the hot water that you use. And then it's recycling that water through several times throughout the day and throughout the night in a circulating hot water system, and removing the dissolved oxygen down to very low levels. And then you have periodic increases when people are using hot water in a high demand period, like showers or, cooking and high use periods. And so you see this ebb and flow, this surge and reduction. And that pattern seemed to be sufficient to control Legionella.
So let me ask you this, because this is interesting as well. Your model's built. You've had the client that's managed to put it, in their building. But it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, the biggest problem that we have is our municipal water supplies, okay, coming in. So is the Lido then, are you able to scale that so that the event, because it seems that this is game changer. This could change the whole direction, the whole industry. Is this then potentially able to be installed at municipal water supply level?
No, I don't think you'll be able to put it at the municipal water supply.
Right.
Because there's too many options, too many places where air can continue to enter the water lines during water main breaks or construction damage or anything like that. But I think really we have to look at it as there's a treatment modality that's appropriate for municipal water systems. And there's treatment modalities that are appropriate for buildings. And they're not necessarily the same. My background in air quality, and I practiced in this area for decades, really shows that. So if you deal with a power plant and you're looking to try to control their emissions, often you use electrostatic precipitation or, sometimes even ozone-producing devices that are at a large scale very effective at removing contaminants from that air. But if you take that same device and try to scale it down and set it on your desktop in your house, it doesn't work.
No.
Because on that scale, they also have all the safety features and all the controls, and they have engineers watching it 24/7. And it seems like it should work, but it often doesn't. And I'm afraid that we've kind of gone down that same path with water. We've tried to take the same technologies, the same approach, the same people who have treated municipal water systems and said, well, go treat a building. It's the same thing. It's nowhere near the same thing.
No, it's completely, it's different. And it's, apart from even just the scale, but as you said, the potential weaknesses in construction, the potential weaknesses in breaks and oxygen getting in, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes. Yeah. So I think this is the first time we've really looked at doing this without adding any toxins, without
it. Yeah.
And also without triggering the Safe Drinking Water Act and the requirement for permitting and testing for disinfection byproducts. We're not adding anything to the water. We're literally only removing gases, dissolved oxygen from the water. And people ask sometimes, well, is anoxic water or low DO water safe? Well, if you think about it, most people don't realize that the water that comes from the purest sources we can think of, deep underground aquifer.
Well water. Yeah.
It is normally anoxic because that water is often thousands of years old.
Yeah.
As it's worked its way through the surface layer and through the sediments, it has reacted with all the oxygen that's there. It has reacted with minerals and iron and metals and microbes. And by the time it gets down there, the reason it's so pure is there's no oxygen down there, and the microbes can't live. And so we pull it up.
That never clicked for me. Because I remember recently, as I told you recently, I was at a friend's mountain house, and the first thing I said was, I'm happy to drink the water here at the tap, because I knew it was coming from deep, 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 deep in the well. But I never considered that the reality was there was no oxygen for it, for anything to grow there. Because here, I'm bottled. You can watch, I bottle everything, I even cook with bottled water. So that's fascinating. I didn't know that.
So we're really returning it to a state where it's not a very habitable environment for microbes to grow. There are some anaerobic microbes that can grow, but we don't normally find them in our plumbing systems.
No.
And the other conditions for pH, heat, acidity, they're really not there. So so far we really haven't seen any issues. The other organisms that we're concerned with, mainly non-tuberculous mycobacterium.
Yeah, NTMs, yeah.
So while we did, so all the data that that I collected as part of the study for Lido has been published in the Journal of Environmental Occupational Health.
And we'll put a link to that, ladies and gentlemen, so you can go and check that study, because, it's been a recent publish.
Yes. And prior to that, I'd published a general review paper on the literature and the role of dissolved oxygen and in the growth of Legionella. And so in looking at that, the data from all that, we wanted to examine the concerns that some people had voiced, some of our reviewers had voiced of NTMs. Are you creating an environment? Are you just trading one microbe for another, one pathogen for another? And NTMs are also...
It seems to me, though, that it seems to me that if you're removing that oxygen and you're not allowing the environment for the pathogen to develop and grow, surely that would be the same for other pathogens.
Not for all pathogens. Some pathogens are anaerobic or what they call facultative anaerobes, meaning if their oxygen is starved off, they have another metabolism that they can switch over to, kind of their emergency backup generator, and they can keep charging on. Now, it's not as efficient. And if you think about it evolutionarily, oxygen was a contaminant on this planet. So the original bacteria in archaea were anaerobic.
Anaerobic bacteria. Okay.
And it wasn't until these nasty things called plankton and chlorophylls started producing oxygen. And this oxygen was just a world changer. It changed the entire world from the oxygen in the atmosphere and in the water. And eventually these, you know, aerobic bacteria, fungi, parasites, everything else, because oxygen just really is evolutionarily a rocket fuel. It really, it juices up metabolism and makes the animals and microbes do really great things. But that mechanism, that ability to be anaerobic, and there's some organisms that are obligate anaerobes. They can only grow under anaerobic conditions. Oxygen is a poison to them.
Their concerns were really warranted then.
Absolutely a concern. So we looked at it, at least with NTMs. Now, we didn't take as many samples. We just took samples in the very beginning and very end of the study. Okay. NTMs are tough to analyze. They take about 42 days to analyze in the laboratory. So the study's almost over before you get the results. So what we found in courtesy of the Pittsburgh water system, we had plenty of NTMs in the water and had colonized our test rig early on. Wow. And there are parts of the test rig that were deoxygenated and there are parts that were not deoxygenated.
Okay.
So we had internal controls and locations within that circulating system. Mm-hmm. And what we found at the end is that parts that were oxygenated that were later at the end of the study controlled under 0.3 part per million of dissolved oxygen had gone from, tens to hundreds of CFU per mil to zero or non-detect for NTMs. So
that's fast. So that was not only just the Legionella, but that's Pneumophila. That's also your NTMs as well.
Yeah. Now that data, we caution people. It was a very small data set. It was only a side examination. We need to look at it more robustly, but very promising, and certainly did not indicate that lowering the dissolved oxygen to that level would pose an increased risk.
And are you continuing that research to obviously get more efficacy in what's being done?
Absolutely. Yeah. At this point, we are working with several organizations to identify some healthcare facilities that this can be installed in. And we're really looking for, I'll say, the ideal test beds where they've had problems in the past, because it's easy to control something where there's not a risk. But to find a place that's had problems in the past and have struggled in order to use other technologies and approaches.
Right.
And we're offering to come in and install a Lido system as long as we can, track and monitor the data.
So you're saying anybody who is listening to this that is involved in healthcare or even the leisure industry or who have been battling with Legionella and continued colonization of Legionella, you're offering to continue this study and offer actually to go in and help them with this and to use this as a test space.
Exactly. Right. So we're really trying to find the ideal situation, but where we've got, good opportunity to collect scientifically sounded data. So that's one of the things that we're doing at this point. We've also received a patent for the means of controlling aerobic pathogens by deoxygenation of premised plumbing water.
Wow.
And of course, like I said, published two peer-reviewed articles on the subject that we've gotten a lot of good feedback on, and people are really looking at this as, wow, that maybe there's another way we can prevent this long-term without causing more problems than we fix.
What is the potential, David? I mean, let's say that you get this installed in a lot of different places, and the evidence, there's empirical evidence that this really does is a long-term solution. Where are we looking at Lido being installed? Let's talk about that.
We'd really like to see it go into the places where it's at greatest risk. You know, certainly long-term care facilities, hospitals,
right.
Nursing homes, assisted living facilities, where you have increased risk patients. There's some, I'll say, you know, research facilities where this is an ideal situation, where adding in another contaminant or, you know, oxidant into the water creates other issues. But yeah, that's where we really are focusing on. We can do this in residential or...
I was going to ask you, where, you know, is there a potential here? Because, you know, residential, I guess, I mean, people are concerned, obviously, mm-hmm. with the safety of their water. And this seems to me to be an answer not only to healthcare facilities and other facilities in the leisure industry and, you know, even in transportation, right? But surely it must actually be something that could be installed in construction and homes.
Well, I think one of the things we will probably see it adopted much faster in areas where water conservation is paramount.
Okay.
So right now, one of the patterns I've seen is that everything we do to conserve water increases the risk of Legionella, NTMs, and other pathogens.
Yes.
Okay. So everything we're doing to reduce the flow rates and increase the recirculation and you know, just minimize that water, the oxidant or disinfectant eventually loses its efficacy, and the organisms begin to grow in those dead legs or slow flow areas. Legionella, though, you know, is still getting into these water systems, and we think with what we'll see with Lido, and certainly have seen, is that once you remove the dissolved oxygen from a building's water system, as long as you have, you know, metal pipes, copper pipes, there's no source for oxygen to go back into that water. There's no photosynthesis.
It's safe.
Nobody's you know, piping oxygen into the water. And so once you've flushed those lines with dissolved oxygen, you no longer have to continuously flush and waste water down the drains. If you're using a supplemental disinfection system, one of the first things they tell you is you have to now continuously and regularly and routinely flush your water lines, which means turn on the water and let it run down the sink so that you're replacing the old aged water with new water that has disinfectant. And so you're defeating the efforts to do water conservation.
So are we also saying then, is, you know, Lido will remove the need to put any chlorine in there or any other compound?
I think it eventually will.
Totally?
I think you'll still need to do it at the municipal water system so that you have some residual getting to the building.
Right.
But then once you're in the building, this type of technology can replace the need for supplemental oxidant adding into those systems. Now, once you get it into a cooling tower or a hot tub where, you know, that water rapidly reoxygenates from the atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I'm trying to ask about the hot
until it's discharged, it'll remain safe and at, you know, at inhibitory levels of dissolved oxygen. But, you know, and so there's some places you're still going to have to continuously treat, but this is one of the biggest ones where that continuous treatment causes problems. The unintended consequences of chlorine injection, whether it's chlorine dioxide, monochloramine, or sodium hypochlorite, we know it causes problems. We know it creates, at least with free chlorine, it creates carcinogens.
That's so scary.
And they're regulated, but they're reduced. They're still there. And so with this, you're not creating any new carcinogens. And
this is actually going to make a massive impact to the potential risks of death because of NTMs or Legionella. Well, and also, that's going to have a domino effect onto many other different aspects of health.
I think there are many areas that Legionella is a risk, you know, outside of the plumbing system. But at least with this sector, now we have at least the opportunity of a solution that, you know, that is difficult to do. It often fails. It's incomplete. And it's not a very good solution. Adding a contaminant to fix another contaminant and creating another contaminant seems to me just a bit silly. You know, what can we do to fix this problem? And what we're doing is we're essentially cleaning up the water a little bit more. We're removing that oxygen that really doesn't need to be in there and is fueling these microbes to grow. Right now, again, we're focusing on the hot water system alone. The system can work on a cold water system, treat the entire premise plumbing, the entirety of the drinking water. Yeah. But it's just got to be larger. So, you know, you use a lot more cold water than hot water. That's the next phase, is to move it into that direction. And hopefully that can support water, water safety with a hot water system. If you're in a healthcare facility, we tell you two things. You're supposed to heat the water to a level that inhibits Legionella, which is too hot. Because on the other hand, you can't heat it above 110 to 120, depending on the municipality, for scald hazards. So if you're in a nursing home, they say you have to heat it, but don't heat it.
Which is the perfect environment. It's the perfect storm.
We're speaking as public health officials. We're speaking out of two sides of our mouth. We're saying you gotta heat it up over here, but don't heat it up too much, you know. And telling people they got to keep it within a 2 to 5 degree temperature range is ludicrous. It's never going to happen. Now you can heat your water to the temperature you actually need it, which is a safe temperature.
Yeah.
And not add oxidants.
The oxygenator.
And just remove the oxygen, and there's no safety concern.
And just for ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening, the fact that removing the oxygen does not make the water unsafe. The water is safe. It's oxygen that's not needed in the water. As David said at the beginning, the compounds of H2O, it doesn't change. So that's important. How long do you think before we could see this being taken on, David, and actually making an impact?
Good question. We're in the process of, I'll say, some of the U.S. EPA has a requirement that this become a regulated device. So if I were talking about a chemical such as chlorine and making claims to say that it controlled Legionella, then it would have to be a registered product under the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act. It's kind of strange. But yes, if you make claims that it has an inhibitory effect or kills microbes, that you have to show it, and it has to be labeled, and it has to be approved by the US EPA. Still, just recently, the EPA has published proposed rules and to be able to show that your product, if it's a chemical you're adding, does control Legionella in cooling towers. So there's been a rule that you have to show it, but there's been no standard process you have to be able to demonstrate it. So that's a work in progress. But if you make a claim that your device inhibits a microbe, not even kills it, but just inhibits it, keeps it from growing, it's not a registered product. It has to be a regulated device.
Wow, that's okay.
And so there's some regulatory hurdles you have to jump. They're not very high, but you know, we're aware of that and in the process of getting the manufacturing plant and the process reviewed and approved by the US EPA.
Now, one other thing before we finish off, I want to talk about, you know, let's say everything goes well, you know, the data comes in, it's steady. There has to be an element of education for people to deal with it, obviously, because you can't just anybody just go and install it, right? So there has to be, you have obviously have to educate water, you know, water safety professionals, water management professionals. Will Lido have to be something that will be regulated where people will have to have training on it?
I think what we'll probably do is work is have it produced and distributed through, I'll say, service companies that's what they do. So, this is not something you would, you know, put in a box and send it to somebody and say, here, just install it. There's it's a specialty device and it has to be installed properly with the proper monitors and controls, and the systems we have are remotely monitored. They allow you to measure the dissolved oxygen ongoing and document that as a control measure, and be able to diagnose and troubleshoot any issues that may arise. So, what we're doing is looking at using a service provider model where, you know, local service providers, local companies would install, service, manage, maintain. Because there's always going to be consumable, you know, things that have to be changed and checked and cleaned. And we're actually even considering that this may only be done as a leased product. So rather than the capital cost of going out and buying all the equipment and hiring the people to service it and maintain it, that you may be, we may all be better off if you essentially, you never buy the equipment. So the hospital administrator or the nursing home, staff, they have things to do. They have to take care of patients. They don't need to become water treaters. I think the ideal model here is basically to hire a company that installs the equipment, services it, and, you know, is responsible for it.
Do you think, David, then, that you'll get to a point where this will be introduced into law, that they will have to abide by this? They will have to have Lido system in the hospital, in the healthcare facilities, in residential apartments? I mean, do you think you'll get to that point?
I doubt it. Not in my lifetime.
it would be good, though. Literally, I
think you know we've got to come up with a better way to treat water systems than we've been doing it in buildings. I think the first thing we need to do, as far as a law, is to change the Safe Drinking Water Act. And right now, the requirements there are that if you, as a building operator, need to inject chemicals under that federal law, which is not enforced consistently across the United States at all, but under that law, you're supposed to become a permitted, licensed public water supplier, which means you're supposed to hire a water treatment operator, a licensed operator. Those people are trained on how to operate municipal water systems, not on building water systems.
I was going to say completely different. It's a completely different animal.
And so I think that law needs to be changed to reflect the reality of there needs to be a different certification, training, education for people who operate building water systems, and as a receiver of treated water and someone who's focused only on buildings, that would make a lot more sense. So some of the laws we have in place probably need to be adjusted long before we tell people how to do it. But at least now we have a solution, a recipe, a way to deal with this that's not, doesn't feel like a science experiment to the building operators. They feel like they're chasing their tails and they're it's like the first time they're ever dealing with this, and it often doesn't work.
You know, it's fascinating because we are literally reducing the risks. And it's, I mean, when you think about it, it's simplified. When, you know, remove the oxygen and it can't survive, really. Yeah. But I know there's a lot more goes into it. But it's like Occam's theory, isn't it, really? Occam's razor, right?
Yeah.
It's the most simplest explanation is probably the right one. And I think that's what you've found.
Absolutely.
David, this has been an absolute fascinating conversation. And I'm sure people out there are going to be excited about this. So, ladies and gentlemen, you know, listening to this a few times, because there's going to be a lot of things that you can, you know, you can contact David at hc3fl.com, ask him any questions. Obviously, there's going to be a lot more about Lido coming out, a website and information and sheets and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you have to give us time in that. But this is the first time you've actually heard about this now.
And we'd certainly like to introduce and ask people to see the published articles. These are open access articles in peer-reviewed publications and journals. And, you know, we'd love your feedback on those. And I know there's a lot of questions that people come up with in these. But, you know, maybe we've found at least an option for proactive treatment that isn't one that introduces more problems than sometimes it fixes.
It's brilliant, actually. And so, ladies and gentlemen, we'll have the links and things up in our, we've got our resources app. We've got our own app on HC3. You can just go there and you can register on that resources app to get our papers and stuff like that as well. We'll make sure that you've got access to that. But I want to just jump back to something that Dave had mentioned, that David had talked about, and that's he's looking for more projects, more people, more organizations that have a problem. So let's, you know, leave you with that, ladies and gentlemen, that if you're an operator in a building, maintenance anywhere, and you have a problem, then please reach out to us so that we can help you and we can get more data that this actually works. So final thoughts, David, you'd like to say?
You know, I appreciate the time to sit and chat about this. This has been a big part of my life for the past 8-9 years. In taking this from just an initial concept to a patented and functional treatment system.
And potentially life-saving.
Absolutely. If we can stop one outbreak, if we can stop one additional person from contracting Legionnaires' disease, that's a big thing. And, you know, its ability to do this without adding more toxins, more carcinogens to the water, I think is, as a toxicologist, that just really, really lightens my heart. And I, you know, really like to see that be used in a wider scale. So we do appreciate everyone's attention to the subject and you bring a light to the issue.
Excellent. David, thank you for joining me tonight. Once again, it has been an absolute fascinating conversation. I've loved every minute of it. Ladies and gentlemen, that web address, again, if you want to contact us, it's hc3fl.com. Very simple, hc3fl.com. Drop us a line, give us a call. We're there to help you. God bless.